This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to a reading of the Braille Monitor, a monthly magazine published by the National Federation of the Blind. Material is selected with the interests of its audience in mind and with the goal to inform and entertain. The opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. This program is funded and in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. We're going to be continuing our article from page 580, Remembering the Why, the Purpose, and the Philosophy, by Denise Meckenstant. A few things happened which I thought were interesting. First, I was able to get the group to participate in a summer picnic with the local NFB chapter in Boise. It was an informative and interesting experience for my fellow students. Also, my fellow students were impressed with how confident and fluid I was in my cane usage. They did not get that this was the result of a longer cane, an important philosophical base. My concluding drop route was not really a drop route as we know it. We planned our own route visually. We were expected to know where we were dropped and to travel to the route as we had planned. An interesting occurrence illustrated the philosophy of the guided learning approach of instruction. At one point, I became disoriented. Even though I was disoriented, I did not remove my blindfold. I worked my way out of it and completed my route. The instructor made the comment that I became disoriented because I had not mapped my route to avoid the area in which I had difficulty. I thought this was telling. I need to thank Ramona Woolhoff and Jan and Harry Gowith for their hospitality during my blindfold training in Boise. This experience taught me that my understanding of structure discovery cane technique was an extension of the Federation philosophy that was already part of me. I was going to be a structure discovery instructor because of the leaders I knew in the NFB and the philosophy which was ingrained in me. I went home and studied everything I could get my hands on. I spoke with other instructors who used structure discovery philosophy and techniques. In the end, I knew that my attitudes were all about the philosophy of the National Federation of the Blind. Would I have wanted to have a full experience of attending Louisiana Tech University? Of course. But circumstances would not allow for that. As a result, even though I was eligible for ACVREP certification, I personally regret not being able to do that. But I was able to pass my NOMC examination. This was the culmination of my dream of becoming an orientation and mobility instructor who uses SD techniques and philosophy. As with many of you, I found that using SD training, philosophy, and techniques was looked upon by my professional peers with suspicion. I was even discouraged at times. My students were the most important examples of the success we achieve with SD training. I work primarily with blind and low-vision school-age students. This included students with additional disabilities to blindness. This may be intellectual disabilities, neurodivergent students, mobility impaired students, and deaf students. I grew to love working with students with additional disabilities. The success of structured discovery was evident in the success of my students. Over time, slowly, I gained the respect of those professional peers who wanted to learn about how I successfully taught students with all disabilities. I did have experience with professional peers who wanted to discriminate against my use of structured discovery. However, my students were the reason I had to continue to believe in the use of SD techniques and philosophy. I found that my work brought tremendous satisfaction. My students needed the kind of training I was able to give them to live the lives they wanted. The National Federation of the Blind continues to be my grounding. I love to be around my fellow SD instructors at national conventions. These SD professional peers are the ones who keep me believing that I am doing what is right by my students. Currently, I have the privilege of speaking to agencies, students, and training centers about successfully working with students who have significant additional disabilities. This is a passion I have. I want my professional peers to understand that these students can successfully benefit from SD training. They have the same desire and need to have the philosophy and skills to determine how they live their own lives. As committed Federationists, we need to be committed to tolerance, understanding, and patience with all students, including students who have additional significant disabilities. I want to end this presentation as I began. My journey has begun because of my belief in blind people as the determiners of their own destiny. My belief in blind people has been a result of knowing members of the National Federation of the Blind. This belief has been challenged by other professional peers, but my students validate my belief in the success of SD. My mentors over this past 53 years have been of unfailing influence. The professional mentors I have found in the field as we use SD to instruct and empower our students have helped me continue to learn. These mentors include, but are not exclusive of, Jeff Altman, Dr. Edward Bell, Duncan Larson, Doug Boone, Mary Noel Chamberlain, and Joe Cutter. My message to you is to continue to believe you are doing right. Your students will thank you. I would like to leave you with my favorite quote. As Dr. Kenneth Jurgen said in his speech, The Nature of Independence, hold your head high in the joy of accomplishment and the pride of independence, but not because of dog or cane or human arm, and not because of your ability to read Braille or use a computer. These are the trappings of independence, not the substance of it. They should be learned and used when needed, but they should be regarded only as means, not ends. Our independence comes from within. A slave can have keen eyesight, excellent mobility, and superb reading skills, and still be a slave. We are achieving freedom and independence in the only way that really counts. In rising self-respect, growing self-confidence, and the will and the ability to make choices. Above all, independence means choices and the power to make those choices stick. The New NLS DTB Player, A Compelling Upgrade by Carl Bellinger. From the editor. Carl Bellinger has contributed many technology reviews and articles to these pages and other Federation publications over the years, and has been a familiar presenter at both virtual and in-person technology demonstrations, boutiques, and seminars. This is his last contribution as a member of the Federation staff, but he tells me he hopes to contribute more as he can while pursuing new opportunities. Here is his review of the upgraded book player from our nation's Library Service for the Blind. The National Library Service for the Blind and Print Disabled has recently begun demonstrating the new Digital Advanced Player 2, DA2 player, as an upgrade to the existing player. This new device provides a straightforward way for patrons of the National Library Service to download books from the Braille and audio reading download service. The new player also supports connecting to Bluetooth headsets. It still supports playback from the NLS cartridges as well as audio files from a USB drive. This new player represents a significant upgrade, making the player much more viable for users who weren't interested in the original player or are frequent BARD users. If you are familiar with the original player, the new one is fairly similar. Most of the front edge is taken up by the cartridge slot. The handle of the player starts just to the left of the cartridge slot and wraps around until it is more than halfway up the left side. The large round speaker is in the top left corner of the player. The speaker sound is very clear and can get quite loud, so you should be able to hear your book just fine in a noisy environment or outdoors. The right side of the player has a headphone jack, a standard USB port, and a USB-C port for charging and file transfer. One notable difference is that the player uses a USB-C adapter for charging rather than having a cord compartment on the back of the unit. The top of the player has a very similar layout to the older advanced player. The front edge has rewind, play with pause, and fast forward buttons. On the left side of the player, there are moored, bookmark, and bookshelf buttons going from front to back. Just above the play button is the sleep button, which lets you adjust the sleep timer. In the middle of the top face are triangular up, down, left, right buttons with an info button in the middle. Across the back edge are three sets of up, down buttons to adjust the tone, volume, and speed respectively. Lastly, the power button is near the right side of the player and surrounded by a raised ring in the top surface. All the buttons are fairly large, rubberized, and easy identifiable by both shape and Braille labels. The new NLS player changes things up by using a USB-C charger. While you lose the convenience of the built-in cord, This new method brings a lot of flexibility. You are not limited to the included charger. If you're away from a standard outlet, you can use a portable power bank to charge the player. Since the player's battery is quite large, I'd recommend using one with a fairly high output to ensure the battery charges in a timely manner. That said, you're not going to need to charge the player very often. The battery life is stellar, easily lasting over 30 hours on a charge. This was with Wi-Fi connected, searching and downloading several books, and general heavy usage. If you only listen to a book with airplane mode on and the volume relatively low, it will probably last for much longer. To turn the power on, press and hold the power button for a second or two. You will hear a little jingle followed by a welcome announcement. After 10 or 15 seconds, the player will come up to the bookshelf. If there are no books in the internal memory and a cartridge isn't inserted, you will be placed in the key describer. Press any button to hear its function announced. Press and hold the bookshelf button to bring up the user guide. When you first get the DA2 player, you will likely want to connect to Wi-Fi. Log into Bard and possibly pair a Bluetooth headset. Press and hold the info button to get into the menu and go to settings. Under Wi-Fi settings, you can scan for networks and select the one you want to connect to. It is possible, though a bit tedious, to enter the password using the player itself. You can use the up and down arrows to move through letters, the sleep button to enter them, and the bookmark button to switch between lowercase, uppercase, numbers, and simple keyboards. Holding down the arrows will let you jump a few times at a time, but it still takes a while, especially if the password is long. Fortunately, the player supports USB keyboards. Plug a keyboard into the USB port and you can type in the credentials normally. Use left and right arrows to review what you've typed and backspace to delete characters. Enter submits the prompt. Once you're connected to Wi-Fi, exit settings and go to the NLS Bard menu option. Use the player or a keyboard to enter your email and password, and you're good to go. Lastly, if you want to pair to a Bluetooth headset, go back into the settings, select Bluetooth, put your headset or speaker in pairing mode, and select it from the list. Before we can listen to books, we need to download something. Press and hold info to get into the menu and select NLS Bard. Log in if you haven't already. There are a number of options in the Bard menu, including search, wish list, most recent or most popular books, recent magazines, previous downloads, and current downloads. Selecting most of these options brings up a list of books. Use the left and right arrows to select one and press the info button. This will bring options to download the book, add it to your wish list, get info including the book description, or close the menu. Once you have one or more downloads queued, you can view them in current downloads option from the Bard menu. The player will download one book at a time, then proceed to the next. Once you have at least one book downloaded, or if you insert a cartridge, the bookshelf becomes available. Once you have books available, you can access the bookshelf by either closing the menu or by pressing the bookshelf button. You can use the left and right arrows to move through the books and play to start reading. Pressing info will read the book number, title, and author, and pressing bookmark will prompt to delete the book. If a USB drive is plugged in, the player will scan the drive for books and announce refreshing bookshelf content. While doing so, it will then add any new books to the bookshelf. I plugged in an external 2TB hard drive with a number of audio files on it to see if the player could work with it. It took several minutes, but the player did eventually index the entire drive and found all the audio files. One downside to doing this is that if you turn the player off and back on, it needs to rescan the drive. If you have a drive with a number of NLS books on it, it may be worth copying them to the internal media if you plan to read them regularly. Once you've selected a book, you can press play to read it. This functions exactly like the reader in the previous player. You can rewind and fast forward using the buttons or navigate among the navigation levels and chapters and using the arrow keys. Pressing the speed or tone adjustments while a book is playing will adjust to the settings for that book only. Aside from the main function of downloading and reading books, the player has a few other features worth mentioning. You can connect the player directly to a computer to copy books to the internal storage. Before this will work, you will need to turn on the Media Transfer Protocol, MTP, option and user settings. Once this is done, the player will show up as an external drive on your computer. You can either copy books to the books folder or copy zip folders to the zipped media folder. Doing the latter will cause the player to unzip the book once it is transferred. As mentioned previously, the NLS DA2 player can connect to Bluetooth headsets for listening to books. I found the pairing process to be straightforward, and there wasn't much lag when navigating around the player. Unfortunately, it is not possible to use any of the controls on the Bluetooth headset or speaker to control the player. This somewhat undermines the point of using a Bluetooth device. The benefit of using Bluetooth is for personal listening at a distance from the player, and having to go back to it every time you want to adjust the volume or navigate within a book is not great. I am hoping that this may change in a future update. In addition to entering text, you can also completely control the player using a USB keyboard. By default, only the arrow keys on the keyboard are mapped to the arrows on the player. In order to configure any other options, you must go into the Configure Key Bindings options and settings and map a keyboard key to each player button. This could be useful if you're doing a lot of searches on Bard and don't want to have to keep switching back and forth from the keyboard to the player. This feature is also intended to work with switches or other non-standard input devices, though I have not tested this. The new NLS player has several features that make it a compelling upgrade over its predecessors. Now that it's possible to download books directly, getting books onto the device is much easier for those less comfortable with technology, while at the same time becoming more compelling for those users comfortable with Bard on other devices. I chose not to have the previous player, as I was easily able to download a book to my phone and read it that way. However, I've been thoroughly enjoying this new player. I love having a book playing in my apartment while I'm doing other things. The speaker is of much higher quality than anything on an iPhone. Plus, it leaves my phone free for anything else. I may want to do or just to charge in the other room, while I probably won't travel with it. The player is small enough to fit easily into a laptop or tablet compartment in a backpack if you want to take yours with you. If you are an NLS patron, I highly recommend checking this player out. Since the player can also get updates over the internet, I expect we see even more new features added in the future. If you are interested, contact your local library to request one. As of the time of writing, the player is also very new and in high demand, so you may have to wait a bit before yours ships. The new NLS Digital Advanced Player 2 is an easy-to-use device for downloading and listening to books that is straightforward enough for less technical users while offering more advanced features for those who are comfortable with getting the most out of their gear. Axis On, through collective action. Mobilizing Leadership Through Blind Center Technology Perspectives by Jonathan Mosen. From the editor, Jonathan Mosen is no newcomer to Federation conventions, but he addressed to a 2025 convention for the first time in his role as Executive Director for Accessibility Excellence at the NFB Jernigan Institute. As President Rick Obono pointed out when introducing him, Jonathan picked up and moved his home and his whole life around the world to assume this role. Here are the updates and plans that Jonathan shared with the Assembly. Thank you, Mr. President, and good afternoon, Federationists. It is an honor to be here as the Federation's Executive Director for Accessibility Excellence. And since I now live here in the United States, I want to assure you that I now feel honored without the letter U. I'd like to thank everyone who has made me feel so welcome to the Federation and to the United States. Technology affects us all. Some of us embrace it. Some of us wish we could avoid it. Some of us find it intuitive. Some of us find it inscrutable. Some of us rise to the challenge. Some of us want to throw the darn thing out the window. While technology evokes varied responses and emotions, we all just want this stuff to work so we can get on with our lives. We demand access that is equal in functionality and reliability, because we proudly and unashamedly assert our worth, and we deserve no less. When companies develop technology for our use, we, the blind, expect to have a seat at the table at a time when our voice can matter. President Rick Obono chose the title of this address, Axis On Through Collective Action. I was delighted that he gave me this title, because collective action is the reason we have much of the technology we now take for granted. Sometimes people say things to me like, oh, I'm really not much of a joiner. If I feel strongly about an issue, I can whip up a frenzy on social media, start an online petition, and make change that way. It's true, you might have some success if you have a big enough following. Your issue gets sufficient traction, and all the noise reaches the right person who can implement the change you're asking for. I've seen it done, but it's rare and it takes time, skill, and a lot of luck. Now, this organization has an unmatched track record of bringing about technological advancement because of the power of collective action. Social media is often an echo chamber, but history profoundly chronicles that the voice of the organized blind has been echoing through the corridors of power, changing the world for 85 years. It is a voice that cannot be silenced and will not be ignored. While an individual complaint may be seen as personal grievance, the organization representing the nation's blind transforms that complaint into a civil rights issue. My fellow Federationists, the NFB is not fighting for us. Collective action means that the Federation is us, fighting for ourselves and for one another. Stronger together, unstoppable in our momentum, gaining solace and strength from our solidarity. To attendees in the room who have come to find out about the NFB, and to those listening online who are not part of our movement yet, I say this. If you want to see technology evolve and improve, if you believe that the blind have not just the right but the duty to build on the work of those who have gone before and worked harder to give us the technological victories we now enjoy, then our doors, our hearts, our arms are open. Come join us. There is a place for you in the National Federation of the Blind. At our Center of Excellence in Non-Visual Accessibility, which we call CENA, C-E-N-A for short, we inform, advise, educate, and advocate about technology. Of course, I have to start with artificial intelligence, AI for short, specifically generative and AI. This is disruptive technology and has the ability to disrupt myths about blindness. The National Federation of the Blind knows that it isn't blindness that holds us back, but constraining attitudes certainly do. All the major AI players are well aware that without intervention, AI may perpetuate harmful stereotypes about blind people. The generative AI revolution has presented an opportunity to correct the record, and we intend to see that it is corrected. We're making progress. Thankfully, it's been a long time now since I've had an AI expressing sorrow that I'm blind. AI companies are actively rebalancing data, ensuring that we're portrayed accurately. Many AI companies now have ethic boards that monitor AI for incorrect portrayals. Blindness-specific datasets where we ourselves demonstrate what it is to be blind help to reduce bias and better inform the AI. AI describes the world among us, and many of us find it helpful. Sometimes it produces vivid, accurate descriptions, at other times it just makes things up. Although they continue to improve steadily, guided by member feedback, we in turn provide guidance to AI companies about the range and kind of information AI should convey in settings. AI should never replace our own travel skills and awareness of our surroundings. Nor do we wish for companies with the potential to provide us with useful information to be overly cautious and patronizing. We continue to talk with technology companies about the concept of AI as an alternative technique for access to visual information. Everyone else can identify people they already know in a crowded room. An AI in theory permits a blind person to do that too. We must make it happen. We must find ways of allowing a blind person to identify someone they know while respecting privacy concerns. This problem is no longer technological. It is ethical. We will work with the industry to figure it out. You'll be hearing much more about agents in the world of AI in the years ahead. AI has the potential to create a new screen reading paradigm that will be particularly beneficial for people who become blind in later life and may not have vocational goals. It can be controversial and easy to use for daily tasks like shopping and communication. We look forward to working with a range of companies in the mainstream and access technology sectors to see this new product category emerge in a way that makes technologically more inclusive while preserving the efficiency so many experienced users need. Speaking of efficiency, we continue to receive feedback from members about the need for companies to remember efficiency when designing for accessibility. There are some applications which are broadly accessible, but which are unnecessarily verbose. Software developers mean well when they do this, but it's the equivalent of ordering a cup of coffee somewhere, and then when someone hands it to you, they say, "Be careful, it's hot." We know it's hot, so we ordered. When we press enter in a browser to load a page, we don't need to be told it's loading the page. It's what we ordered. We're in the undesirable situation of some applications speaking way too much, and third-party screen readers with far fewer responses than big tech having to invest some of those limited resources in making these apps bearable. That is wasteful, pure, and simple. Some may think that this is a finicky complaint. It is not. When you calculate over a work or school year, the lost productivity due to suboptimal experiences, accessible but inefficient user interfaces holds us back. Now I'd like to talk about something we've received many phone calls and emails about. Facebook. Given how much concern people have expressed, I think it is important that I account in detail to the convention about our advocacy on this subject. Blind smartphone users who use Facebook have not had an easy time of it. Several severe bugs crept into the Facebook app, which were left unresolved for a long time. Not everyone uses a smartphone. That is their choice. That is their right. And if a desktop site exists, we demand that it is fully accessible to everyone. Late last year, just ahead of the Thanksgiving holiday, when people often use social media to connect with one another, Meta closed down its mBasic Facebook site. We know that change is the only constant when it comes to technology, and that the mBasic site was designed for older mobile phone browsers that no longer exist. But many blind people used it because it was clean, simple, and accessible. I don't think Meta appreciated the accessibility impact of deprecating the site. Nevertheless, the elimination of that workaround exposed how increasingly riddled with accessibility problems the primary Facebook site had become. Things were pretty bad. But the National Federation of the Blind and Meta have been in constructive, respectful, forthright dialogue. We've gathered your feedback, we've found common threads, and provided helpful steps for the Meta team to duplicate defects. Meta, in turn, has been responding. It has fixed some of the particularly egregious bugs that were frustrating smartphone users. We're now starting to see improvements to the main Facebook website, with some of the keyboard shortcuts fixed and extraneous block quote characters removed. We're not yet at our destination. The journey continues, but as long as we see changes in response to our feedback, we will keep the conversation going. I also acknowledge Meta's presence here at our national convention. They have come so they can hear from their blind users, and we are pleased that they have responded to our feedback on improving the Meta smart glasses. And I think you will be impressed with what is coming.
Remembering Ruth Miriam Swenson, advocate, leader, and friend, February 21st, 1949 to July 22nd, 2024, by Gary Wunder. With the death of Ruth Miriam Swenson on July 22nd, 2024, the National Federation of the Blind lost a passionate advocate, a fierce intellect, and a cherished friend. Ruth served as the president of the National Federation of the Blind of Arizona from 1987 to 1995 and again from 2001 to 2005, pouring herself into the work as if it were a second full-time job. Her dedication helped shape the Arizona affiliate, giving it new life and purpose. Chapters in the East Valley, Prescott, and Yuma grew under her guidance, and even when those chapters eventually dissolved, her legacy of local leadership and outreach endured. Born in Chicago on February 21, 1949, and raised in Willamette, Illinois, Ruth lost her sight while in high school. Her blindness, however, never defined her limits. It revealed her resolve. She earned a bachelor's degree in education from Northeastern Colorado University, a master's degree in special education from Illinois State University, and a law degree from the University of Nebraska, Lincoln. In Lincoln, she met her future husband, Jim Soule, who had volunteered to read for her. The partnership that began with shared print materials grew into 39 years of marriage and professional collaboration. Together, they moved to Chandler, Arizona, where Ruth first worked for community legal services before opening her own law firm focused on family law and domestic violence. Jim served as her paralegal, and together they worked to ensure that those most vulnerable had strong, capable representation. Ruth was tireless in her commitment to justice. Within the Federation, she helped wine vendors win Social Security cases and secure their legal rights and fair earnings. She brought intelligence and clarity to her advocacy, insisting that her accomplishments were the results of hard work and dedication by someone who, in her word, happened to be blind. She has known to those close to her as a lover of good books, a sharp debater, and a generous host. She cherished conversations, welcomed lively disagreement, and never hesitated to speak her mind. Her son, Tony, recalls that she was affectionately called the bookworm and that she loved to laugh, even in her final days when she told him with a calm resolve, "I'm ready to go home." Faith played a central role in Ruth's life. As a teenager, she embraced the Baha faith, and her steadfast belief influenced not only her actions, but those of her family as well. In remembering Ruth Swenson, we celebrate a woman who led with intellect, fought with courage, and lived with conviction. She is gone from our sight, but not from our hearts, and the Federation is stronger for the years she gave to us. From the President's Desk. From the editor, the following is another selection of letters that President Rico Bono has recently written to the government officials regarding policies that affect blind Americans. These two letters address protecting the Randolph Shepherd priority at the Military Installations and Rehabilitation Act regulations that help blind people obtain employment with federal contractors. Here are the letters. August 20th, 2025, the Honorable Pete Hegseth, Secretary, United States Department of Defense, 1400 Defense Pentagon, Washington, D.C., 20301. Randolph Shepherd Program. Dear Mr. Secretary, it has come to my attention of the National Federation of the Blind, the nation's premier membership and advocacy organization of blind Americans, that you recently sent requests to the Department of Education seeking a waiver to the Randolph Shepherd priority on all Department of Defense properties. Your request is predicated on the assertion that vending facilities operated by blind vendors adversely affect the interests of the United States. On behalf of more than 1,300 blind entrepreneurs who operate vending facilities across the country, including approximately 115 DOD properties, Department of Defense properties, we respectfully disagree. We hope to enter into a much-needed dialogue with the DOD on how Randolph Shepherd vendors can better meet the needs of men and women in our military. We recognize that our current process leads to some inefficiencies, and working with the Department of Education and your office, we believe we can drastically streamline and improve operations. As the Secretary of Defense, you are uniquely positioned to make that happen. In that regard, I want to note that part of the problem is that the program operates under an outdated model that has not changed in the last 50 years. Our organization has ideas on how to modernize the program to improve efficiencies. This may be the perfect opportunity for the DOE, DOD, and the Randolph Shepherd stakeholders to work collaboratively towards such modernization. Your letter addresses two different issues. The first relates to military troop denying contracts and others to traditional vending facilities such as automated vending machines, micro markets, and snack bars. We want to keep the issue separate and wish to start with the concerns about the dining contracts. Blind entrepreneurs currently operate dining contracts on only 55 bases, so we are fairly small pieces of pie. Still, the Randolph Shepherd community is very proud of the quality of our dining services it provides. In 2025, two of our blind entrepreneurs were presented with the Captain Edward F. Ney Memorial Food Service Award that recognizes best mess halls in the Navy. Eddie Turner, who manages the contract at the Meridian Naval Air Station in Mississippi, was presented the award in May for having the best Navy food service in the East, and Jerry Gahn at the San Diego Naval Base was presented with the award for the best in the West. Another of our blind entrepreneurs, Virgil Stinnett at the Marine Corps Base in Hawaii, was presented the same award in 2024. Over the years, multiple blind entrepreneurs have won the Air Force's John L. Hennessy Trophy and Philip A. Conley Award for Excellence in Army Food Service. These numerous accolades speak to the high quality that blind entrepreneurs deliver to our customers. If there is a perceived lack of quality, it should be stressed that our blind entrepreneurs can only contribute so much since they are typically required to use food and recipes provided by the military. In some instances, we don't even cook the food and provide only dining facility attendant services. As for the expense of Randolph Shepherd contracts, the contracting officer have statutory authority to directly negotiate contracts with the state licensing agencies that ensure a fair and reasonable price. Increasingly, more contracting officers are taking advantage of this flexibility, which increases contracting efficiencies and saves the DOD millions in costs associated with lengthy and expensive solicitations. Through Randolph Shepherd, contracts can be awarded faster with much less administrative overhead. We can't overemphasize that the price is negotiated and that the contracting officers determine and ensure a fair price to the United States government. Direct negotiation is a tool granted by Congress that offers the opportunity for everyone to win. And we are seeing it in practice right now. It is worth noticing that if the Secretary of Education grants your request, we do not believe you will get the outcome you desire. First, Secretary McComb's determinations would be challenged in court, which would mean a significant expense of time and taxpayer dollars. Even if she were to prevail, other set-aside programs would step in to fill the void. The Ability One program currently operates more dining contracts than Randolph Shepherd, and that program would then expand to more bases. However, Ability One contracts can cost more than Randolph Shepherd contracts, so troop dining costs could increase rather than decrease. Other set-aside programs, such as 8A, would be in line to assume some of the slack as well. Admittedly, the arbitration process can be burdensome, and if state licensing agents believe the contracting officer inappropriately applied for the priority, they often request the Security of Education to convene an arbitration panel. These can be frustrating, costly, and time-consuming. We understand that. Just a few short years ago, there were multiple arbitrations at any given time. Today, there is not a single active arbitration. That speaks to the progress that has been made. Before leaving the issue of cafeteria contracts, I want to directly address the upcoming national contract to provide food services at all Marine Corps bases in the United States. In this textbook example of how the Randolph Shepherd priority can be used to the advantage of everyone involved, Sodexo is the incumbent, and by all indications, the Marines are happy with the services and would be more than happy for Sodexo to continue. Randolph Shepherd has proposed a unique approach whereby the states involved would team with Sodexo, and 13 blind entrepreneurs would help manage that contract at a price the Marine Corps believes is fair. A burdensome and costly solicitation would be avoided. Randolph Shepherd has proposed direct negotiations as a means to accomplish this. In this scenario, everyone wins. The Marines would be able to ensure the same high-quality service by keeping Sodexo as a partner in the contract. The contracting officers know they would get a fair and reasonable price because they get to negotiate price and only agree if they are satisfied. 13 blind entrepreneurs in 8 states will have jobs. The state agencies for the blind that administer the programs will be capable to fulfill their responsibilities to create opportunities for the blind. It is a win-win situation. /scenario. Our concern is that if your letters filter down to the Marine Corps contracting officers, they will be hesitant to proceed down a road they have indicated they desire to follow, but that may be seen as being in conflict with your position. Under the circumstances, we urge your office to communicate with the Marines and other branches of the military and allow them to continue operating under the status quo until we have an opportunity to work with you to explore other possibilities. Finally, I want to briefly address traditional vending facilities, which are more typical of most businesses operated by blind entrepreneurs. By our count, there are 348 military installations in the United States, and blind vendors have a presence on only 22% of those installations. In terms of operating vending machines, snack bars, micro markets, etc., by law, a blind entrepreneur be on every installation. Opportunities have been blocked by the exchanges. Congress granted a priority to a blind vendor. The exchanges do not have such statutory priority other than internal policies and directives. This has created friction, and that friction has only intensified because the Army and Air Force Exchange Services and some members of your staff have refused to have conversations on how AAFES and Randolph Shepherd can coexist and complement each other. It is not the goal of Randolph Shepherd to take over everything and run the exchanges out of business. We understand and appreciate their mission, but the Randolph Shepherd Act requires at least one blind vendor on every base if predictable. There are opportunities if those involved would just sit down with the intent of working things out and engage in meaningful dialogue. Our members have tried, but have been blocked at every turn. Randolph Shepherd has much to offer. Some bases are very unhappy with the quality of AAFES vending machines on their bases. If a base commander wants better service for his soldiers, isn't having options other than AAFES a positive for a troop? What if Randolph Shepherd could bring national change to your men and women in uniform? Chick-fil-A may not be inclined to do business with the federal government, but there could be an opportunity to bring its restaurants to military bases through Randolph Shepherd. We've met with them in the past and have at least one Chick-fil-A operating in the state building in Tennessee. Perhaps we need to revisit that. What if we can offer healthier options that are more in line with the Make America Healthy Again initiative? Aren't exchanges by statute restricted to selling to uniformed personnel with some limited exceptions? They serve civilians in multiple locations. Could that be a starting point for discussion? I say all of this to highlight that there are opportunities for collaboration. In conclusion, the National Federation of the Blind urges you to communicate with the Randolph Shepherd community in a mutually beneficial way. We request that you withdraw your waiver request until such a time as we can meet with you, which we request at your earliest convenience. We look forward to ushering in a new era of collaboration. Sincerely, Marco Rico Bono, President, National Federation of the Blind, CC, the Honorable Linda McHone. August 14th, 2025. Catherine L. Isbach, Director, Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs, United States Department of Labor, 200 Constitution Avenue, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20210. Modifications to the regulation implementing Sections 503 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. Dear Director Isbach, the National Federation of the Blind is the main nation's premier membership and advocacy organization of blind Americans, and we appreciate the opportunity to comment on the Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs proposed rules. Due to our longstanding advocacy efforts to improve employment opportunities for the blind of America, we must oppose the OFCCPS's proposal to rescind the affirmative action and employment utilization goal of Sections 503 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. Since our founding in 1940, we have worked tirelessly and to advance the lives of our tens of thousands of members from our 52 affiliates, as well as all blind people in the United States. Naturally, a significant part of our advocacy over the past 85 years has been striving to ensure that blind Americans are able to obtain steady, fulfilling, and gainful employment. The OFCCP proposed rule is contrary to those efforts. Section 503 of the Rehabilitation Act requires federal contractors with contracts in excess of $15,000 to engage in affirmative action to employ and advance in employment qualified individuals with disabilities. By requiring affirmative action, Congress thus imposed higher obligations on federal contractors beyond mere non-discrimination. Then it is imposed on a non-contractor employer under the Americans with Disabilities Act. The Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs promulgated regulation clarifying the meaning of affirmative action for the purpose of Section 503 by specifying that federal contractors should have an affirmative action policy in place and plan in place, undertake positive outreach and recruitment activities to recruit individuals with disabilities to apply, invite applicants and employees to voluntary self-identifying as people with disabilities for purposes of affirmative action, and use a utilization goal of having 7% of their employees be people with disabilities as a guideline for assessing their progress. This regulation went through extensive notice and comment and reflected a compromise lower than the prevalence of people with disabilities in the working age population, approximately 20%. Importantly, the invitation for applicants and employees to self-identify as people with disabilities under Section 503 is voluntary, and the self-identification can only be used for affirmative action. The self-identification cannot be used to discriminate and cannot be compelled. These protections distinguish Section 503 self-identification from the pre-employment medical inquiries prohibited by the ADA Title I regulations, which are mandatory and could be used for the purpose of discrimination. However, OFCCP, in proposing to rescind the Section 503 self-identification requirement, conflates with the Section 503 self-identification requirement with the prohibited pre-employment medical inquiry prohibition. Indeed, even the ADA permits post-offer medical examinations before an employee starts working and permits employers to seek voluntary medical information for purposes of employee wellness programs. There is no legal basis for OFCCP's confrontation of the Section 503 and ADA's provision. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which is legally responsible for interpreting Title I of the ADA, has repeatedly made clear that disability affirmative action programs, including voluntary self-identification, do not violate the ADA. The Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs refers to merely one example of the EEOC's expression of this conclusion, a 2013 letter from the EEOC's legal counsel to the OFCCP's director. In addition, in 30 years since that guidance was issued, and in a decade since the Section 503 self-identification regulation was promulgated, no court has found that voluntary affirmative action related self-identification violates the ADA. Far from being an exception to the ADA, prohibition on mandatory pre-employment inquiries, the Section 503 voluntary self-identification requirement is fully consistent with and furthers the goal of the ADA. There is also no basis for eliminating the Section 503 utilization goal. Again, no court has found the goal to be illegal, and the OFCCP does not provide any basis for finding the goal illegal. The Section 503 regulation specifically provides that quotas are not required and, in fact, prohibited. Thus, there is no basis for OFCCP's unsupported conclusion that contractors may, in practice, be induced to using quotas to meet the utilization goal. There is no evidence of the OFCCP cites to none that contractors are instituting disability quotas. The utilization goal requirement merely provides a benchmark for contractors to assess their progress towards a non-discriminatory workplace. Because the ADA does not protect non-disabled people in the United States, Constitution merely protects non-disabled people under the rational basis standard. A non-disabled person would not have a standing to challenge the utilization goal, even if it did result in a quota. Because disability discrimination in employment is so prevalent, and because employment rates of people with disabilities have consistently lagged so far behind disability prevalence in a workforce, see U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, Economic News Release, Persons with Disability Labor Force Characteristics Summary, showing work-age disabled people with double the unemployment rate and half the labor force participation rate of non-disabled people. There are good policy reasons far beyond a rational basis to require affirmative action and to provide contractors a tool for assessing their progress and eliminating disability discrimination. It is worth noting that according to the American Community Survey conducted annually by the United States Census Bureau, the full-time, full-year employment rate for blind working ages 21 and 64 Americans has increased steadily each year since the implementation of the Section 503 utilization goal regulation in 2014. In fact, the rate has increased by nearly 12% in the decades since the regulation has been in effect. Prior to that, the number was stagnant. We know there have also been advancements in training, education, and technology in that time. But with all of these factors combined, the employment rate for the blind of the nation is trending in a positive direction. We would hate to see any of that progress reversed. Once again, we appreciate the opportunity to comment, and we are available to answer any further questions you might have. Sincerely, Mark A. Riccobono, President, National Federation of the Blind. monitor miniatures. In brief, notices and information in this section may be of interest to monitor readers. We are not responsible for the accuracy of the information. We have edited only for space and clarity. Antigua leads tour designed for blind and sighted travelers. Antigua Legends is an immersive audio experience of one of the most historical sites in America. The UNESCO World Heritage Town of Antigua, Guatemala, featuring local legends that weave together history and culture. The collective stories are a window of time that spans from the ancient Maya through to modern-day traditions. Then to bring the legends to life, each is paired with hands-on activities that take you from coffee fields to spending the night on the top of a volcano. Designed to be equally enriching for both blind and sighted travelers, Antigua Legend is an unforgettable week's vacation in the land of eternal spring presented by Blind Pilots. Check out all the trip details and dates at www.blindpilots.org. Blind Pilots is an independent international travel designed for blind travelers to make the most of valuable vacation time while also easing feelings of responsibility, sometimes experienced by sighted travelers. Partners by enhancing the ability of the blind participants to experience independence. Safely testing your comfort levels with the peace of mind that your professional guide is right by your side for the entire custom itinerary. Contact Scott Garrison at scott@blindpilots.org. To learn more about our Antigua Legend trips, any of our upcoming destinations, or joy of travel itself. A Bridge to Myself, A Bridge to Our Dreams by Melissa Rico Bono. From the editor, Melissa Rico Bono is the First Lady of the National Federation of the Blind, the co-host of the National Blind Podcast, and as she shows in this article, has held or currently holds many other leadership roles in our movement. The National Federation of the Blind is dedicated both to helping blind people achieve our individual dreams and engage in collective action to advance all of our lives. Happily, we often find ways for these two missions to intersect, and Melissa describes how such an intersection was personally profound for her and how it can be for our readers. As I step out of the van, I hear the sounds of hundreds, perhaps even thousands of people. There's fast-paced, familiar music filling in the air. There's someone on a mic making announcements. There is cheering in the distance. There are feelings of sunshine and a soft fall breeze on my skin. And there's something else in the air. Invisible but unmistakably an energy that makes my heart speed up, brings a smile to my face, and a few happy tears to my eyes that I do not shed. It is at this once positively familiar yet something I foolishly believed I'd never feel again in quite the way I used to. It is the energy of competition, of teamwork, and of people eager to conquer something for themselves, while also being part of something that's bigger. It is truly a bridge back to myself, the person I used to be, and the way I used to feel. These are all the things I experienced in November 2024 as I waited for my turn to take part in the Bay Ridge Run Walk. The first time I rode across the Chesapeake Bay Ridge in November 2003, I was fascinated. What an iconic bridge. A bridge that connects the western and eastern parts of Maryland. A bridge that is 4.4 miles long and 186 feet tall. We have nothing like this in Wisconsin, where I grew up. Now that Maryland was home, I was lucky enough to have the Chesapeake Bay and this bridge only 45 minutes from my home. I don't know why, but I asked the driver if he could walk across the bridge or if it was just for traffic. I was told that, for the most part, people could not walk across the bridge, but on one day a year, the bridge was open to runners and walkers. At that moment, I added participating in this event to my bucket list. I knew I wanted to experience the length and height of the bridge, and it was the only way I could truly do this was by running or walking across this. When I added this event to my bucket list, I figured it would only be a short time before I checked it off. After all, I was young and healthy. I could run in the 8th grade and cross country and track in high school. I ran in Paralympics in Atlanta in 1996. I participated in some 5K and long races in college. Though I did not run nearly as much as I did while training in high school, I had my share of injuries, sprained some ankles a few times, and unfortunately some extreme painful stress fractures in my legs that cut some of my season short. And I did not have someone to serve as a guide runner for me in Maryland, but I figured these things could be overcome. I could advertise and find a guide runner, I could start training, I could heal from any injuries, and I could run the Bay Bridge. It was as simple as that. Life, as John Lennon observed, is what happens while we're making other plans. As my husband, Mark, settled into his new job at the National Federation of the Blind, I began my own job hunt. I had a brand new master's degree in counseling psychology with an emphasis in school counseling. I wanted a job, but not just any job. I wanted a job as a school counselor, ideally in an elementary school. I took 9 months, but I finally landed this job in the fall of 2004. Hobbies included running, took a backseat as I learned to navigate my job and all my new responsibilities. As Mark and I hunted for and bought and moved into our first house we owned together, by 2005, I felt ready to begin running again. I started out on a treadmill, wanting to get into some type of shape before looking for a guide. Unfortunately, my knee began to bother me. I eventually went to physical therapy to strengthen it and found out the way my feet strike the ground while running is somewhat unusual. My therapist told me I could run again, but before I started training, I needed to go to a specific shoe store where they can watch me run and where they can recommend and I could purchase specific shoes that took my running style into account and would help alleviate the strain on my body. This sounded expensive, and while I waited to save money for this purchase, I got pregnant with our first child, Cynthia. I will not bore you with the breakdown of everything else that happened year after year, which caused me to put my running on hold. Of course, there are two other children who joined our family. I became president of the National Federation of the Blind of Maryland for the first time, and then Mark was elected president of the National Federation of the Blind. Our lives were full. I couldn't quite figure out how I could put running into the mix. Then for a while, the Bay Ridge Run Walk Club was held, so I figured there was no way I would ever be able to walk to go across a bridge on foot. Then the pandemic came, and for me, serious health concerns that had been building up for a while were finally diagnosed as chronic fatigue syndrome in the winter of 2022. To say that chronic fatigue changed my life is a vast understatement. I am incredibly lucky to have received treatment that has improved my symptoms a great deal. But back when I was diagnosed, I truly believed participation in any strenuous exercise was over. I could not stay awake for an entire day. I needed at least one nap in the afternoon to function. I had severe short-term memory and word retrieval issues. I had an incredibly difficult time writing, something I had always enjoyed and taken pride in. There are events I wanted to attend, but just couldn't, because I knew I would not be able to get through them without becoming completely exhausted and staying exhausted for days to come. Chronic fatigue does not just make you tired, it crushes you. You are tired down to your very bone and your souls. You reach for some energy reserves, but there's nothing there. My doctor told me to exercise for 5 minutes a day. That was it. Of course I could walk, but I couldn't get my heart rate up for much more than 5 minutes. This made running out of the question, even if I had energy to run, which of course I didn't. I'm going to stop here for this episode, and I'll continue reading this article in the next episode. This community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Once again, 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.com, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Saba, and thank you for listening.
You've been listening to the Braille Monitor, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program scheduling, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Once again, that's 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org. Or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. If you have an idea for a topic to explore, please contact Audio Journal at 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org. Once again, that's 508-797-1117. I'm Ray, and thanks for listening.